You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Behold! The four-headed beast of board gaming banter that is The Dice Men Cometh! To talk tabletop games with three of its heads. Although this is broadcast from two-headed Tasmania, so I don't know.
Six heads, maybe?
We'll leave it for you to figure out who's got the fat head, the rough head, and the pretty head. Because my name's Trent.
I'm Mark.
I'm Leon.
Garth couldn't be with us tonight.
And look, coming up tonight, we've got a plethora, nay, a lot... of board game news. So much board game news.
You're like an anti-thesaurus.
Much news, yet we're wasting time.
We've got so much news, and we're going to talk about a game that's very exciting. We had a ball with it at BorderCon. That is Mechs versus Minions. Leon is going to regale us with something or rather, which he assured us that it's interesting, and we're going to play some songs. We're going to have banter back and forth,
which is what people love about us. It's the banter,
it's the bunter.
And also although I do know that people, some people in the board gaming community
that don't love us,
hate the fact that we play music. Hate it. Yes. I'm looking at you, Scott Nicholson.
Oh, no! Don't go there!
I'm looking at you, buddy. Beardy buddy. I'm looking at you. But there are many ways to listen to this podcast, and I know that a handful of people are metalheads like myself and hang for those secret coded metal messages that I send every week.
That I then edit out.
And this week, it's the fact that I like the new Suicide Silence record. Ooh. Because it sounds like this.
Just pleasant.
The sound of silence. Suicide Silence. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men Cometh is a show that you're listening to, specifically episode number 172, courtesy of our friends at Area 52. Thankfully, not located next door to a secretive US military aircraft hangar in Arizona, but in Elizabeth Street.
Awesome.
In Hobart, full of games, books, comics, and nice people, some of whom even work there.
And I did see they have a big Magic pre-release coming up this weekend, which maybe last weekend, depending on when you're listening to the show, but there's always stuff happening at Area 52.
Area 52, home of Cardboard Crack, a.k.a. Magic.
Yes, that's right.
No, we love them. Thanks for supporting us, guys, and thanks for supporting the radio station as well. We appreciate it.
We sure do. The other thing that we appreciate
is a good game.
Absolutely. And
is that what you were going to say?
We played one.
He had no idea what we were going to say. He just wanted us to say something.
We played one at BorderCon. Or at least
For God's sake, Mark, will you shut up about BorderCon? Everybody knows we went to BorderCon. I went to BorderCon every week.
Well, the good thing about going to BorderCon, Trent, is we got to try a whole lot of new games.
Yeah, we will be saying the word BorderCon every week until the next one, funnily enough.
But tonight I want to talk about, and I did mention it briefly when we first had our post-BorderCon conversation, what I thought was my most fun experience on the BorderCon weekend.
Oh, that was the dinner on Saturday night.
No.
Okay.
You weren't there. That's probably why it was most fun, but anyway.
The dinner on Saturday night was good. That's when we had the glasses hoodie, the white guy gangster thing going on.
And we didn't have the duck fat potatoes because God knows where they went.
Oh, it was a shame.
Yeah. But we did play.
Nice waitress, though. Anyway, back to what were we doing?
don't go there. Oh, no. Hang on. I've got to get my head back in the game, literally.
Right. Yes.
Mechs versus Minions. Now, this is a game. Came out in 2016, produced by Riot Games. Now, they don't make board games.
No, they make that one video game.
That's right. They make that one video game that I have never played, League, but I think 80 million people play daily. around the world. League of Legends.
You play a lot more video games than either of us, Leon. League of Legends. I've seen the stand at PAX. It's obviously massive.
Yes.
It's one of these massive multiplayer online arena battle things.
It certainly is. That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
And I've seen it in action. I understand it kind of, yet I haven't played it because I don't play multiplayer games I don't like other people.
And you don't want to get your ass kicked by some 12-year-old in Korea.
I don't find it relaxing being called racist slang words by 12-year-olds.
Right.
I don't find that relaxing. Call me old-fashioned.
Well, there's no racist slang words in Mech versus Minions that I've discovered yet anyway, but it is designed by the team at Riot Games, Chris Cantrell, Rick Ernst, Stone Lebrunde, I like that name, Prashant Saraswat and Nathan Tiris. Those guys... they've never made a board game in their life until now.
Were some of those words cheeses in the middle there? Anywho.
The art by Danny Beck and Tyson Henderson. And this is a board game unlike any other I have ever seen. One thing that was said in a review that I read online and I liked it so much I'm going to repeat it here. The inserts in this game are better produced than the components of many, 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 many board games.
You know you've crossed over into the Twilight Zone when you're just listening to three white guys talk about how good an insert for a board game is. But it really is.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They are. So look, let's take a step back. So Mechs versus Minions is a cooperative board game for 2 to 4 players set in the world of Runeterra. Which apparently is the world that League of Legends is set in, so they tell me. You take on the roles of 4 intrepid yordles. Because goblin, that word was maybe taken.
Yeah.
So you play Corki, Tristana, Heimerdinger, and Ziggs, who are the 4 characters who must join forces and pilot their newly crafted mechs against an army of marauding minions with modular boards, programmatic command lines, and a story-driven campaign. Each mission will be unique, putting your teamwork, programming, and piloting skills to the test.
It's essentially fancy robot rally, yeah?
Yes and no. So...
mostly yes, what is but this maybe
game?
No.
So look, just to get you across the line though on this game. So this game, when it first came out, retailed on Kickstarter for $90. This game contains 100 minion miniatures, 4 massively big mech miniatures that are fully painted, and the minion miniatures are, I'd say, not painted but dry brushed. So they certainly have a finished look to them. They're not just your bland grey plastic miniature.
Yeah, and they're a good 3-4 centimetres tall, of them as well. So
And there's 4, was it 3 or 4 different sculpts of the miniatures as well?
Yeah, there's 3 different sculpts of the minions.
Yeah.
And then you've got your 4 individual characters that are a good, how big is that?
That's about
10 centimetres maybe, or more.
Thumb to finger
length. Yeah, that long.
Mark, asking 3 men to tell to sort of name an approximate length, by holding your fingers and thumb up? Are you really asking us to do that?
Back to the insert. This is getting ridiculous.
So you've got masses of stuff. There's dice. There's acrylic shards. There's lots of cards. There's your player boards. There is a box full of stuff. And the fact that this box cost only $90 is absolutely amazing. And I think at the time they were only charging maybe like $15 or $20 for shipping, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, we said it when we first saw the game. I don't know how they make a cent off this at all.
Here's an interesting thing. So I have got so many interesting factoids about this game.
Ooh.
So part of the reason it was so cheap was that it was basically the Riot Games, the League of Legends company, saying, you know what, guys? You people out there playing our game, we love yous so much. We're going to produce this absolutely amazing board game, and we're literally going to sell it for below cost.
Yeah, okay.
That's how much we love yous.
A loss leader.
Yeah. But you've also got to remember that these guys and this company, they're, is it
squillionaires?
Squillionaires, I was going to say. Is that the technical term?
Yes.
So money to them, what are they really?
I mean, that's money. Their initial print run was 30,000 copies.
Oh, my God.
Yep. And they're just there now. You can pre-order for Wave 2, where, believe it or not, the price has gone down. So now it's $75 US for the same game. Unfortunately, though, you can only order it through the Riot Games website, and they only ship to US or Canada, because I tried to order one last night. But $75 US is the game plus shipping.
But there's ways around that shipping.
Of course, of course. So
there are ways.
Wave 2, they're making another 15,000 copies. Now, when there's $80 million people a day playing League of Legends, 30,000 and 15,000, 45,000 in total, it doesn't sound like a lot. But when you look at board games, where they make print runs of hundreds, maybe a couple of thousand, maybe 5,000. We're talking a massive number, like a huge production run of these games, which they're incidentally, they're produced by Panda Games in China, who make many of the good board games.
We all know Panda Games is the best factory in China.
Absolutely. Yes. So look, the super high quality. What you get in the box is you get one campaign of 10 missions. And look, one of the things, and I know I said it last time, one of the things I love about this game is it plays very much like, funnily enough, a computer game where, actually, it's not even one of the 10 missions. It's like the tutorial mission, which is not included in the 10. You get a tutorial, which basically you play through. And as you play it, it shows you how to move, how to draft a card. Did I mention you draft cards in this game, which you then put onto your command line, which is like you programming your mech.
Mm.
And that then is the program movement part that is like Robo Rally. So Robo Rally is just programming. But this, in this, you draft cards that you then put into your program. You can power up by adding more of the same card. So you might have a card which lets you like move one space and shoot one space. You add a second card the same, and it might then let you move two spaces and shoot out four or eight or out a whole bunch of different spaces, and you can power up to, I think in most cases, three levels.
Can you be reactive at all as the programming is playing out, or are you stuck with what
you... No, so what you're doing is you're drafting. Once you draft, you're placing your card into your command line, and then you're executing in turn order your program, if you like, where you step through the cards that you have.
But there was a way when you kind of healed, I believe, however you did that, which I can't recall, where you could move things around, could you not?
Yes.
So you can eventually, you might have to move things around because of the damage you've taken, or you just need things to be in a specifically different order.
Well, I think I seem to remember there were two options for changing.
Yep.
So if one of the ways you take damage is you basically, you have six slots for programming. So when you take damage, one of them would be one of those slots gets randomly damaged and you roll a die for that. And basically that slot is effectively wiped out. Now, when you're repairing damage, you can repair that slot. If you don't have any damage to repair, you can actually swap two lines. So you are able to manipulate your program, not reactively as such, not so, oh, the minions are doing that, now I'm going to do this. But what you have is, so you have drafting cards, programming cards, you play out your move, then the minions have their move. So you've got the opportunity to basically wipe out all the minions before they then move. But, of course, at the end of their move, they spawn. And there's a reason why you get 100 minions in this game, because almost 100 minions spawn every turn. It's like, it's crazy, depending on the campaign. So the point I was making, though, is you've got a tutorial campaign, which very much like a video game, you're learning the very basics of the game. And then in the first mission, you learn a few little more complicated things, and it ramps up the difficulty and what you need to do. Now, the interesting thing I found, I'm using that word a lot, is League of
Legends. For a change,
League of Legends and Riot Games referred to the fact that they took that way of basically rolling out rules in a gradual sense from Rob Daviau and his legacy game system, where he sort of does that. But Rob Daviau took that system from the way video games work. So you've got a video game company producing a board game, copying another board game guy who copied it from a video game.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about Rob Daviau, I believe it's pronounced, in a moment or two. Leon, did you enjoy Mechs versus Minions? Because I mean, Mark's mentioned it before, that he loved it. You had a slightly more frustrating experience, as I understand.
I enjoyed it just as much. But yes, there was a little occasion where I may have I may have either programmed wrong or I took a bit of damage. I may have spent four turns in a corner and just didn't do anything. However, I did go on to win that mission.
You did.
Almost single-handedly, thank you very much, by pushing a big bomb onto a big diffuser thing. But yes, at first I must say that I spent some time in the naughty corner, whether I wanted to or not, because I kept turning to face the right way, and then I was damaged and then turned back the other way into the naughty corner, and because that's the way programming works.
Another super fascinating factoid about this game, both Tom Vassell and Quinton Smith from Shut Up and Sit Down were flown over to Riot Games to playtest this game. Mm. And from what I read, Tom Vassell played this game and went, "Oh my God, it's awesome!" in the form that it was in at the moment. It was in quite a different form when he played it. Quinton Smith then played it and said, "This game is not bad, but it would really benefit from actually being like a campaign-based game as opposed to just one scenario that changes up every time." And thus, the campaign mode was born. So good on him for actually telling them that.
And good on League of Legends, Riot Games, et cetera, for just spending more money flying board game podcasters from all over the world to playtest stuff. What are we, chop liver?
Yeah, pretty much. But it is something that I hope to become standard in the industry. Any game where you have...
Free flights for podcasters.
Yes. Well, yes. But any game where you have modular boards and different little scenarios and stuff, give us a campaign.
Yeah.
Don't give us all these awesome miniatures and all these cool different board types and whatever else and just give us four different kinds of things but no campaign.
So, and look, I mean, that's, I think, about... This one of the things about this game is it's infinitely expandable because you've got so much there in the box, lots of player boards.
And there's so little game in it.
That's right.
That seems to be my impression. Look, I haven't played this, I have to say. My overwhelming impression, though, is that this is a case of production values 11, 12 out of 10.
Oh, yes.
Okay. But game... Give me a break.
Oh, no,
there's
no,
not
no,
much
no,
going
no,
on
no,
here.
No,
really,
no,
is there?
No.
There is.
Is there?
It is the sort of game because the campaign, the missions are not overly long, so they're only like 60 to 90 minutes. So it is the sort of game where you go, oh, let's play that one. All right, let's play the next one. I'll let you look. I can see it going. You could sit down and play all 10 missions in a row easily because it's so much fun.
It's Robo Rally Descent. That's what it is.
With the
best looking
anyway,
components ever.
Look, it was nominated. This is how much people have loved it. In the Golden Geek Awards, it was nominated for Most Innovative Board Game, Board Game of the Year, Thematic Board Game, Best Strategy Board Game. It was nominated and won for Best Co-op Board Game, and it was nominated and did not win Best Board Game Artwork and Presentation. How the hell did this not win that award that was won by Scythe?
But
like, Scythe deserved a lot of awards.
Yeah.
Does it get recommendations from two of the three Dice Men assembled?
Oh, yeah, baby. Yeah. I need to mention as well, it was nominated for the South by Southwest Tabletop Game of the Year, along with Captain Sonar, Inish, The Others, really? And Arkham Horror. And Arkham Horror won that award.
Arkham Horror, the card game, yes.
Yeah, sorry, Arkham Horror, the living card game. Look, I just think this game has got so much to offer so many people in the hobby. It's not going to be for the hardcore Euro, but for almost everyone other of us, I don't think you can go wrong. Jump on board Wave 2 now, work out a way to get it shipped to Australia, and you will love this game.
Mechs versus Minions, another game what we've been playing lately. Thanks again to Area 52 for looking after us. It's the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Talking board gaming news after this.
That was Stormy Eyes by Tales in Space on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. This week brought to you proudly by Area 52, our friendly local hood. Friendly local hood? Yeah, why not? Pop Culture Center, where they have everything you need, and they also have some awesome events from time to time hosted by very, very attractive people that are also wearing some very nice merchandise of those events right now. Cross promotion, I'm stealing it. Boom.
You do know this is like radio. Yeah,
We
can't. We can't see your T-shirt, but you know. Spoiler alert: it's black.
It is black. Spoiler alert: it's always black. Anyway. We're going to talk about some news, aren't we?
We are. Everybody join me. Board gaming news. Details on Pandemic Legacy Season 2 have been announced, and the gaming world has gone mental.
We should probably finish Season 1, maybe.
The board game looks quite different.
Yes.
But not that different if you get up close and personal with it. Of course, the sequel to Pandemic Legacy Season 1, which many people feel is the best game of all time.
Yeah.
If they get time to actually sit down and play through it all.
The fact that we're been stuck on or we haven't progressed past September or October.
Yeah, something like that.
For a good 6 months at least.
Yeah, minimum, yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know Pandemic, I mean, look, it's a whole chain of board games fighting diseases around the world. And Legacy Season 1 is probably the biggest, most amazing deployment of that mechanic. Season 2, bigger and better and more different again.
Yeah, and part of the exciting news about this is good friends of the show, Aos and Rachel, who are two friends of ours who've been going to the Gathering of Friends.
Oh, yes.
That sort of invite-only con that's hosted by Alan Moon and a whole bunch of gaming luminaries at Niagara Falls. They actually played, I think it must have been 2 years ago now. They basically had a locked-in session for a number of days where they play-tested this, and they both reported, even though they weren't allowed to say what game it was or give any details.
They had to sign non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah, they both reported that it was really, really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, that says something.
Designers Matt Lecoq and Rob Davio are once again working with Z-Man. This time, Pandemic has a post-apocalyptic theme. Most of the board starts empty this time round, and more of the map is revealed by scratching it off.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Pandemic
Season
2
Pandemic
is a giant scratchy.
Nice.
There's a mysterious space on the board marked game end cards. Not sure what that means.
Ooh.
And a promise that you can also make your own characters. Also don't know what that means. I think it just means there's a blank space on the character card that you can write any name you want in. But in the biggest twist, the diseases are already incurable. In this version, you have to get supplies to the long-lost cities that have gone dark, and you discover them as you scratch and sniff away, and you've got to get supplies to them to combat the disease. And while you're busy trying to help some cities that you've discovered, finding new ones also poses an additional threat. There's many familiar elements to be seen in this so far from the pictures that we've seen, but it also seems that some of the old things are back with just a new lick of paint and a bit of a twist.
I have a very important point to add to this, and I've thought this for a while. I reckon Scratch and Sniff could take off again. Because it's been a very, like, even in my lifetime, it's been a very long time.
Sure, sure.
And it's just that.
And I'm old enough to remember the smell-o-vision.
Yes, I'm sure. So I'm sure it's a thing that could take off again. Anyway, what were we talking about?
What does tuberculosis smell like?
Pandemic Legacy Season 2. No release date announced just yet. Australian board game chain Good Games will shortly be opening their second US store.
Ooh.
And I have to admit, I didn't know that opened the first one.
No.
But they opened up last August in Indianapolis.
Oh, home of gaming.
Exactly.
Gen Con.
Home of Gen Con. Exactly what their thinking was. And they'll be opening in Chicago in the coming weeks. They are big, big stores. And believe it or not, in an interview at the Gamma Trade Show recently, the Australian founders of Good Games, the chain, reckon there's a gap in the US retail market.
What?
For gaming, yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's no big chain store.
I was
going to
say the same thing.
You've got, like, your cool stuff, ink and stuff like that, but there's no chain store.
There was a lot of talk about Barnes & Noble stocking a lot more board games these days, which is obviously a massive, massive sort of Walmart-style bookstore that has huge stores in many of the major cities. And there was talk about them having a lot more board games, but maybe they didn't. I don't know.
Since books don't exist anymore, they have to do something.
Also, there seems to be a pattern in the states and the big American cities where, excuse me, the board game stores will tend to be in the suburbs,
yes,
in the malls rather than in the city, the way they are in the smaller Australian cities, which is where a lot of the good game stores are located around the country. Anyway, we wish them luck, of course. And speaking of US retail, Asmodee North America, which is, you know, the proverbial giant vampire squid that controls the entire gaming universe, has dropped a bit of a distribution bombshell, by announcing an exclusive deal with Alliance Game Distribution as of August. What does this mean? Probably nothing for customers who won't notice a damn thing. Many of the Asmodee sub-brands like Z-Man and Days of Wonder have all had similar exclusive deals with Alliance in the past, and Alliance has got a similar deal with WizKids. But it's basically like having... well, in Australia, the equivalent might be like a Woolworths or a Coles, a giant sort of Hulk in the distribution market.
So you mean that potentially there's going to be a giant monopoly...
He said it, didn't he? We were trying to sneak around it, but he said the
word. Well, Asmodee is Fantasy Flight, Days of Wonder, Z-Man, okay? And if you are a retailer and you want to stock that stuff, you've got to deal with this distribution company, and other distributors get squeezed out. Sounds a bit like a big economic board game, doesn't it?
Yeah. Best not spoken about.
Yes. I want to be the Scotty dog.
Sad news on the sudden passing of Stuart Week in July. Stuart was the publisher of White Wolf Gaming Magazine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Co-founder of White Wolf Game Studio and a big part of the World of Darkness RPG universe. That includes Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Apocalypse, and Mage the Ascension was Stuart's original design. Mm. He started all of this in high school. In high school with his brother Steve. Stuart was just 49 years old.
Oh.
He wrote fiction as well. He collapsed following a fencing workout, and maybe the best thing that could be said about it, as his brother Steve said online, he died with a sword in his hand.
That's something.
Yeah, it is something to be said.
Okay, brighter news. We all know Legendary Encounters, the alien card game, is one of the Dice Men's favourite trashy games.
Mm.
It's a system that just keeps on giving with the film tie-ins. Buffy the Vampire Slayer Legendary.
Oh, yeah, I'd love that.
Really?
No, yeah, I'm sold.
It's I don't know why it's not Encounters. That's my issue. I don't know why any of them aren't Encounters at this point. Because you can work, if you've got a massive universe like your Marvel, you don't need the Encounters because you've got all the characters and all the different like villains you can go after and stuff. If not, if you've got a smaller universe, which a Buffy is, or even say, what was that film, the one with Dolph Lundgren in it that they did an Encounter version of?
Big Trouble in Little China,
that's the one. See, that wasn't...
You're deliberately misnaming cast members of my favourite movie of all time.
He was in that with Brandon Lee. It was a brilliant film.
And you know the board game adaptation of this is coming. You're mocking me mercilessly with your ignorance and your youth, and I hate you in your black T-shirts.
It's a fair point. But yes... I just don't know why they don't make them Encounters and give you storylines and more interesting things to do. It just seems weird.
What I want to know is the Buffy Vampire Slayer Legendary game mixable with Legendary Firefly? Can you have a big Whedon verse nerdgasm?
I'm pretty sure they're all mixable in some way.
Yeah, I mean, the iconography and the rules without each of the special... whether it's the plots or whatever, all of them follow those similar rules. All of them have some of the same symbology. You could technically mix any of them.
You can have Captain America fighting a predator.
That comes out in August anyway, which is about the same time that the legendary DXP comes out, which is the digital version of the same game.
I am excited about this, lads, and I did post it on our Facebook page. Now, at one stage, I was only number 92 in the queue. I've dropped back.
There's a queue?
I've dropped back.
There's a queue to download the game?
No. This is for the beta.
For the beta, yeah.
Beta.
Debut.
It's named after a videotape.
Debut.
I want all our listeners to go to our Facebook page.
Not a Sami.
Find the story about Legendary DXP. Click on that very first link at the top of the page because that pushes me further up the line. Okay. But I'm really excited about this because, firstly, I love Legendary. But, secondly, this is a whole new universe that they've created.
That's the thing.
It's not the online.
It's not themed to any property. It's just.
No, they've made up a whole new universe.
It's just some lame fantasy theme they've thrown together. It's not going to last, surely. Surely they're just waiting to see if this works online before sticking Captain America versus Predator in it.
Except the issue is going to be, obviously, the licensing.
Yeah.
of, I mean, it's one thing to license a card game from the Marvel Universe, but it's another whole thing to have a massive online property with all these different universes, and I reckon that would cost them an absolute bomb to get the licensing for that. Or, in fact, they probably just wouldn't get it.
Who would win, by the way?
Captain America and Buffy.
No, and a Predator.
Oh, good point.
That is a good question. Tell you what,
well, hang on, but if Arnie could beat... If Arnie beat a Predator...
But if Dolph Lundgren is driving the Pork Chop Express...
Okay, we're going to have some words off air for a moment and continue with board gaming news. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Man cometh having serious words.
Hello, everybody. Just Leon here. A quick break from the action just to ask, how are you? How are you today? Have you had a fun day? Oh, that's good. What'd you have for tea? Oh, that sounds lovely. I had chicken salad wraps myself. They were scrumptious. So how about that local sports team? I hope they wigged the big, you know, the big thing this year. Wouldn't that be good? Anyway, now that we're friends, how about you give us some money? Yes, that's right. Just a quick break from the action just to let you know that we indeed do have a Patreon. And if you would like to support us, there are many different levels you can chuck us some dollars. But we ask you for one simple thing, and that is $1 a month. You've got other levels if you want to give us more money. That's grand. But if not, give us $1 a month. I promise you, you won't even notice that it's missing from your account. I do the same for a few different podcasts and have no idea that it's even gone. And I promise you won't too. However, if everybody that's listening to my voice right now were to do that for us, we would sure notice it. So, if you'd like to support the show that's been helping support you and entertaining you for many, many years, chuck us $1. Thanks very much. Now back to the show. I can't really remember what's happening. My assumption is Mark really liked a game, Trent is angry about something, and I'm probably tired. Go you local sports team!
You're back with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and that was Trans Violet with Girls Your Age here, where we're proudly presented by Area 52, one of Tasmania's leading not only board games, but also pop culture and comic stores. You can get your massive comics orders in there. Thursdays is comic day, and all your pop Funko vinyls and all those other thingies that the young kiddies are into these days.
Oh my God, just stop talking.
No, he's got to keep talking because he's going to tell the listeners about something. Do you know
that? I do know, because the other thing we're all excited about, we launched it last week and we've got a little while to go. We've got a competition.
We do.
Oh, yes, I'm excited about this. Yes. It's great to see an Australian Kickstarter going off.
That's right.
Which Lucidity certainly is.
Lucidity Six-Sided Nightmares is on Kickstarter for another 12 days.
At the time of broadcast.
Continuing to go gangbusters. They're now closing in on $80,000 when their original goal was close to $15,000, with over 1,500 backers. And all you have to do to win either a copy of this, our preview copy that we have handled, you never know what sort of DNA might be on there, or second and third prizes, 80 custom dice that you could do so many things with, and that could go so badly. All you need to do is send us your worst board gaming nightmare to dicemencometh@gmail.com. We've already got quite a few entries, but this competition is going to run for at least as long as the Kickstarter campaign, so another 2 weeks. So email us, dicemencometh@gmail.com, your worst board gaming nightmare to win a copy of Lucidity, Six-Sided Nightmare. If you haven't checked it out on Kickstarter, please do, because it's awesome.
Board gaming news part two. Okay, I'm just going to talk about some cool stuff that's coming out. Another one of our favorite games, The Grizzled.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's recently just been bought by Come On, Call Me or Not.
Ooh.
So they've actually bought the rights to it.
Oh, will we get the tabletop tactical version? Will we get to be in trenches?
There's an expansion, a standalone expansion called the Armistice Edition.
Oh, standalone.
Which includes, Leon?
Yes.
Campaign element.
Hey!
No, I mean, why would they have bought it if they didn't intend to milk the lizard?
Yeah.
And put out a heap of expansions for it. Yeah. Pretty good game on its own.
Yeah.
One of our favourites. Fantasy Flight is publishing Game of Thrones themed Catan.
But what?
Just in time for Christmas, too.
Right.
And the new season coming up in just a couple of weeks. This is going to be the first of many, guys.
Oh, yeah.
You remember when they figured out how that they could put a different skin on Risk every other week. Yeah. We had like 100 versions of Risk in the store.
Well, we've already got Star Trek Catan. I think there's a Star Wars Catan.
Is there?
Yeah,
okay. I'm sure there is.
Half of them go into print and then kind of go out again. I think the Star Trek one's supposed to be really good, I believe. I think that's the one.
Well, certainly I think the one that I've heard the most of. But I'm wondering is, do you get like the longest King's Road? Or instead of the robber, do you have the Hound or the Brotherhood Without Banners?
Or the there's a sexy dwarf in it.
Look, it's the same thing with Wizards of the Coast. They're putting out the reskin of Betrayal at House on the Hill as Betrayal at Baldur's Gate.
Yep.
All right, which is it's apparently good. All right, it's fine. I mean, it's taking a pretty sound, popular game and just reskinning it.
Mm.
But how long until we get Betrayal at the X-Men Mansion? Or Betrayal at Hogwarts? Oh, you guys are excited by this crap.
Yeah,
because they're things people know about. No one's heard about Baldur's Gate in like 30 years.
And speaking of Fantasy Flight, they've also announced an expansion of their so-called narrative dice system, which is the dice system. We've talked about this on the show before. It's the one they use in the Star Wars RPG.
Yes.
Yep. With all the symbols instead of numbers on the dice. So that dice system in a new universe called Genesis, spelt Genesis, S-Y-S, and it's designed as a universal gaming system like GURPS.
Oh, yeah.
Right? No doubt they'll be offering a series of adventure settings in books that you have to pay for.
That's that overly complicated dicing system, though. We really didn't enjoy it that much. Well,
there was the sort of initial novelty of having the option, because the whole idea is that you're supposed to interpret the dice narratively. It's supposed to give the players more freedom to do that, take some of the load off the DM. In practice, we just found it hard to read.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like, oh, there's three of those and four of those, and then some of those cancel out the other ones, and there's one of those, and, oh, have I saved one from last time?
And they're all different colours and shapes.
It's ridiculous. And then you pull out, you know, Mrs. Bun, the baker's wife, and then it gets even more complicated.
Another Kickstarter, a classic RPG making a comeback, Top Secret. You're old enough to remember Top Secret, Mark.
Oh, we're chocolate milk. That's the movie.
That's the film.
That's the movie. It's not related to that.
No.
I never played Top Secret, the board game.
Oh, look, this one came out from TSR in the 80s, right? Ask Your Grandpa, right? It was one of the first big steps away from fantasy RPGing.
Probably similar time to maybe like Traveller.
Even before that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the original designer is putting together Top Secret, New World Order. It's from something calling itself TSR Games.
Ooh.
I don't know how that works, because Wizards of the Coast bought TSR years ago and then just killed the brand. So how someone else can suddenly start calling themselves TSR Games, I have no idea.
Interesting.
Anyway, it's online. It's on Kickstarter, waiting for your money. All right, WizKids have announced a game that's been in my head for years.
So they've stolen your idea.
They've stolen my idea.
Yep.
Using telepathy.
They've also invented words.
Yeah, ridiculous. No, they've used some sort of strange technology to get hold of the telepathy.
Mm.
It's called
Entropy.
Who Should We Eat?
Oh, really?
Right.
We played that on the way back from Bordercom and we got lost.
There might even be an episode where I'm talking about this.
Yes.
Someone who listens to the episodes more than I do can tell me. Players are castaways on an island trying to build a raft, but forced to turn to cannibalism, only to have the victims of the feast return as ghosts to drive the survivors mad. Comes in October, plays up to 10.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? Comes with 9 long straws and 1 short straw and a wooden conch shell to bash as a gavel. You can get all Lord of the Flies on each other. If food runs low, a trial is held at the end of every day. That's followed by a knife fight.
On a boat, on a raft. Knife fight
on an island.
Boat. Oh, of course.
And if there's no knife fight, players draw straws and get eaten. Mm. I'm all about this.
Yeah.
WizKids, Who Should We Eat? Also coming to Kickstarter, Larry Harris, the man who created Axis and Allies, returns with War Room. Oh, my God. Have you heard anything about this? No. You're staring at me blankly.
No. I mean, Axis and Allies, obviously, it's a behemoth.
Behemoth?
Behemoth.
You are... You are the anti-thesaurus tonight.
Like a literal behemoth to the flame.
We've all had a crack at it. Okay. War Room is the new game from Larry Harris. You can replay World War II for a change.
What?
That's different.
With secret simultaneous movement of units, economic and social simulation, resource management, combat, needless to say. You got to feed your country's population. There's collapsing economies. There's a massive circular board over a metre wide.
Wow.
It looks like, just playing it, looks like the War Room in Doctor Strangelove.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is there going to be a pie fight at the end of it?
Comes to, that's right.
I made a reference. Hey. That's a little older than me. That's right.
To a film that's almost intellectual. I'm impressed.
No, not a trouble.
Okay.
I watched it on a YouTube video.
Hey, I've got a little bit of board gaming news. Right. I'm going to ignore that. So did you hear during, I think it was during this last week, or at least this last 10 days, great friend of the show, an amazing Australian board game designer, Phil Walker Harding.
Oh, yes.
Won the Austrian Board Game Design Award for his Baren Park, or Bear Park, which we played at BorderCon. Now, firstly, who knew there was an Austrian Board Game Award? I didn't.
Austrians.
But congratulations to Phil, because it is an awesome little game, and it has been getting some good press. It's only out in German at this stage. But it's very much language independent anyway, so it doesn't really matter if you can get your hands on it, if you can play it. We really enjoyed it at BorderCon, and it does scale quite good from almost a gateway game up to more complicated, depending on which sort of bits you add in.
Well, everyone loves Bear Tetris. I mean, that's, we've known that for hundreds of years.
Bear Tetris.
Yeah, that's right. The whole point.
Finally, last bit of news. Nominations for the 2017 Diana Jones Award were announced in June, but we didn't cover it, so I thought it worth mentioning, because this is my favourite award in all of board gaming, the Diana Jones Award. It's got a little bit of sort of taking the piss element in it. It's given every year to anything and anyone that represents excellence in gaming, and it's judged by a secret panel of gaming industry figures, many of whom are very, very famous in our industry. So this year's nominations, and bearing in mind these aren't always entirely serious. Nomination one, The Beast, a single-player erotic card game that involves players keeping a secret diary of their sexual encounters with a monster.
Right. What did you say? That's a single player game?
Single player.
Mark?
End of the
reviews, please.
It's too close to the bone.
Oh.
End of the line.
Bear Tetris again.
End of the line is a live action role playing game that first took place in an abandoned mental asylum in Helsinki for 6 hours.
Right.
Last year, Gen Con has been announced, just for general, you know, good stuff in gaming.
Yeah, fair enough.
Games, Gloomhaven.
Yeah.
Terraforming Mars.
You're right. It is a joke, isn't it?
And the Romance Trilogy, a series of RPGs by Emily Kerr Boss that focus on love and relationships. The Diana Jones Award was won last year by Eric Lang because, you know, Eric Lang. And they'll be announced during Gen Con.
It was the haircut, wasn't it? That's why he won. It was the haircut. Yeah.
And that's the news. We are out of here, but not before we give a final plug. I think by the time this episode is available for download, unless it happens quickly for some strange reason this
people
week.
Could be listening to this.
Ooh.
And walk up to you, Trent.
Ooh.
With you in their ears.
Oh, my God.
Then hear you talk and do the, Uh-huh.
You'll be the one with the sexy Dice Man merchandise wrapped around your bodice.
That's right.
What are we talking about?
I got my Dice Man top and I'm heading to LFG looking for games in Sydney, more specifically Bankstown, more specifically still at the Bankstown Sports Club. This is the second year of this particular convention. And look, they've supported us here at the show, and we're doing the same thing by getting along. And I'm so looking forward to meeting more gamers based in Sydney and New South Wales.
And Shem Phillips, who you've interviewed twice
from Garfield Games,
but you're going to be able to look him in the eye,
It'll be a pleasure to meet him, and it's always going to be a pleasure to see Renee again, and Charles, of course, and so many of our other friends from New South Wales.
Oh, actually, if you're there and if Renee's there, you might be able to get a game of Oktoberfest. So I played...
I've got a feeling that'll probably happen.
Yeah, yeah, because I played... I was going to say half a game, a bit less than half a game at BorderCon, and then we had to sort of stop because the massive BorderCon raffle just rolled on and crushed everything before it. But I'd be really interested to hear your take on it, Trent, because it's a dreadfully, awfully presented game, but it's a fantastic concept, and the way it plays, I really enjoyed it. It's terrible production values. Renee, if you're listening, get Trent on board Oktoberfest.
I can dig the theme.
And also, while we're at it, something very important. What is Mrs. Bun, the baker's wife, from again?
Who knows? Mate, probably YouTube, the way you're
going. No. It's from a famous game. What am I?
I don't know. I don't know half the references you pretend to. Like, we're in two different universes, you and me.
No, it's from a thing.
Happy Families.
No, that's not right.
Isn't it?
No.
Okay, there's going to be another argument after this wraps up. This is The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks a lot to Area 52 for looking after us again this week and for supporting the show and supporting Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We're actually overdue to give Area 52 some recommendations for games. Okay, if you had to write JB Hi-Fi style a little recommendation for the Dice Men Cometh on an Area 52 card and stick it on the shelf, what game would you recommend right now?
Terraforming Mars.
Leon, right now.
Mad King Ludwig?
Yeah, Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
I think we've already done. This is why it was in my head.
I would recommend Mansions of Madness. All that and more available in Area 52 and Elizabeth Street. Thanks for looking after us. Thanks to Edge Radio. Thank you for listening. See you at LFG. Bye.
Bye.
Well.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au. And find us online at thedicemencometh.com.